Won't be official until probably sometime this afternoon, but let me be the first to welcome back Xander Bogaerts to the San Diego Padres. I would imagine that the Padres will make that move later today. Xander Bogaerts went 2-for-3 last night in his second straight rehab assignment with the Lake Elsinore Storm. Had an RBI, a walk, a run scored, played 6 more innings in the field. It seems like he's passed all the tests in his recovery from his shoulder break. Hit 333 in 6 rehab games, 4 at AAA El Paso, 2 at Lake Elsinore. Came back to Petco Park earlier this week, took a lot of batting practice on the field as well. Really, no reason for him to stay in the minor leagues anymore. So my guess would be tonight, tomorrow at the absolute latest, but Xander Bogaerts should be returning for the San Diego Padres. And
love it.
None too late, because if you were paying attention last night, the New York Mets shut out the Washington Nationals 7-0, and another win by the Mets lifted them to 2 games above 500. I think a season high, 2 games above 500. That is also where the Padres are, and due to how percentages work, the Mets are actually percentage points ahead of the Padres now for the 3rd and final wild card spot in the National League. So the Padres now would not be in the postseason. If the playoffs started today, Paulie.
Your favorite words.
Padres would not be in the playoffs. The New York Mets would be. They've continued their surge, and all it took was 4 losses in a row for the Padres to basically undo a lot of the good work that they did over the last, you know, month or so in playing some of their best baseball of the season. That's how on a kind of a razor's edge the National League playoff chase is probably going to be for the rest of the year. It's been very mediocre, obviously, for most of the year. But for so many of the teams that have hovered, you know, usually a couple of games below 500, 500, a couple of games above 500. But there's no guarantee that that will continue. The Mets could get hot and stay hot. And they could be a team that, pulls away and starts, building a lead in the wild card race. The St. Louis Cardinals, who are also a game ahead of the Padres right now, they could get hot, they could get cold. The Diamondbacks, they won again yesterday, 1-0 over the Braves. They're back to 500. They're only a game back as well. So you have a bad week or so, you could find yourself not only out of a playoff spot, but chasing down 2 or 3 teams that are now above you. And while, yes, there's still plenty of time left in the season, we're only at the All-Star break, we're past the midway point. And before you know it, you know, a couple of weeks from now, it's going to be August. And then truly, it is going to be playoff chase time, where it will matter if you're, 2 games out or 2 games up. At some point, that context is going to matter. Right now, you play well the rest of the season, you still control your own destiny. No one's going 78-0 the rest of the way. Mm-hmm. So you play well, you're fine. But at some point, if you play badly for a month, you are going to have to rely on other teams to play poorly in addition to you playing well down the stretch.
The worst spot to be in.
Well, that's where the Padres were last year.
Yeah.
And while they did play well the last, 3 weeks of the season, they put themselves in too deep of a hole that other teams didn't play poorly enough to allow them to climb back into a playoff spot. So you don't want to be in that situation again. That's why 4 game losing streaks need to be snapped, and you need to get back to some winning ways. They've done it every other time this season. They've lost, 5 in a row, 4 in a row, 5 out of 6. They've always bounced back with a good stretch every single time. Now they're being asked to do it again, and do it against a really tough portion of the schedule, with the 3 against the Braves, and then you come right out of the break against a really good Cleveland Guardians team and an East Coast road trip to start the second half of the season. So this is a dangerous spot on the schedule. I know Craig Elston often talks about kind of the red alert, spots where you're looking. This is definitely one of them for the San Diego Padres now. And they're going to need to turn it around quickly and play some good baseball, starting tonight, hopefully, with the 6:40 first pitch, Matt Waldron against Spencer Schwellenbach. Need a contestant for Take on Woods. We got John coming in from down the hall. He's going to fill in as our guest competition. Either way, it's your opportunity to win a trip for two to Las Vegas, two nights at the Rio. We got dinner credits. We've got day beds at the pool. They've got new rooms. They've got new pools. You got a new food court and everything if you want to check it out. But you have to battle John in our musical trivia competition. Give us a call, 833-288-0973, 833-288-0973 if you want to play our game here in just a couple of minutes.
You got a chance against John. He's good.
He's good. He's very
but
good.
Woods is really good.
Woods is the best. He's been gettable, though. He's lost a couple of times this month. We'll see. John's, what is he? I think he's 2-1 in the game, I think all time, maybe. He'll know his record when he comes in.
But yeah, that's probably about right.
But somewhere around there. So, you know, he's no pushover. You'll definitely earn it if you get it, but you got a chance here. So, call us now. Mentioned during our interview with the Cespedes Family Barbecue guys, the Paul Skeens no hit bid yesterday, 7 innings, no hits, 11 strikeouts, but he was pulled by Pirates manager Derek Shelton after 99 pitches. And while I certainly understand a rookie pitcher who is probably on an innings limit and you want to save some of those bullets for the second half of the season, you're going into the All-Star break. You know he's got some extra rest. Even if he pitches in the All-Star game, it had to be pretty tempting to leave him out there and see if he could do something special.
Here's Derek Shelton after the game. He said it had nothing to do with the pitch count.
It really didn't have anything to do with the pitch count. Everybody makes it about pitch counts. It was about where he was at. It was about, you know, trusting your eyes, trusting him. When I went and talked to him after that, I mean, he was tired. They did a good job of wearing him down. And, I mean, he gave us everything he had.
I mean,
I get it, but
you can say it's not about a pitch count number, but it's pitch count is about a guy getting tired at the end of the game and not wanting to throw him out there.
That's a main contributing factor into where he's at.
That's just another way of saying
99
his pitch count was pretty high, and we thought the smart thing to do would be to take him out of the game. Obviously, that's why pitchers usually come out of the game after 6 or 7 innings. They're tired. And it's time to go to a bullpen arm. I understand the concept here, Derek Shelton, but most pitchers don't have a no-hitter going as well after those 7 innings, so it makes your decision a little easier.
Did he just try to outsmart the media right there?
I think so. It's not about pitch count. It was about, it was about him getting tired at the end of the game.
It's not about pitch count. It's about how many pitches he threw.
You know what? If the Padres had a rookie sensation like Paul Skeens, I think I would have been okay with that decision as well.
It would have sucked.
It would have sucked, but, you know, caution. This is a guy that the Pirates are...
What happened in the rest of the game? When did the first hitter?
Next inning, two hits in the eighth inning. They didn't give up any runs. They did end up winning the game 1-0, so they didn't lose the game. So you can say Derek Shelton got exactly what he was hoping for. That was the win in the game. But they didn't get the no-hitter. They gave up a couple of hits in the eighth inning. If this was a pitcher on the Padres, though, you're hoping they're going to be healthy for, you know, several seasons into the future. This is his first big league season. He was pitching in college at this time, you know, basically pretty much 13 months ago. You really don't want to throw a guy out there if it's 70 pitches, if it's 110 pitches, if he's tired, he's tired, and it would be irresponsible for a manager to send out a guy. If you really talked to him and he said, yeah, they took it all out of me that inning, I am gassed, you can't go, well, you have to go back out there, you have a no-hitter going. You can't say that. No, you have to go out there, you have a no-hitter going. No. No manager in baseball is going to do that. Some managers will say, hey, this is up to you. Do you want to see if you can go out there and continue? I will trust your judgment here. And a lot of pitchers would say, yeah, I want to go out and try to finish the no-hitter. All right, let's. I see Johnny's out there, so let's get to it. It's time to play Take on John.
It's time for Take on Woods.
Take on Woods.
John is laughing about our production values here for Take on Woods. Take on Woods is brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Care. It only takes 15 minutes, and you don't have to get out of your car. For directions and discounts, go to SoCalOilChange.com. That's SoCalOilChange.com. We have to pick a contestant here.
So now you leave again.
Oh,
we're gonna
all right.
Play
that's all right. Yeah. Say hi to. Is this Russ?
Yes, it is.
Russell, say hi to John. You're about to take on each other in our game today.
Hey, Russell.
Hey, John. Good luck.
All right, John. Thanks, give us a minute. We're going to play his portion of the game, and then we'll bring you back in for the second half. If you can beat or tie John, you will qualify for our grand prize getaway to Las Vegas. Just told you about it. At the Rio, you can book your rooms right now at RioLasVegas.com. All right, Russell, here are your categories you can choose from today. We have Oh Boy. Those are five song titles that include the word boy or boys. Seen and Heard. Five song titles that include either the word seen or heard. And boy bands, those are bands or artists with boy or boys somewhere in their name. So, Oh Boy, Seen and Heard, or boy bands. Russell, what would you like to play?
Wow, let's try Oh Boy.
Oh Boy. Okay, five song titles that include the word boy or boys. You'll have 60 seconds. Pass if you don't know one. We can come back to it. First question's the two-second song. Polly's going to play you some music. You need to give me the title of the song and the artist to score the point. Russell, are you ready to go?
I think so. Let's do it.
All right. 60 seconds on the clock. Again, the category is Oh Boy. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck, Russell. Let's take on John.
Tap.
Don Henley says he was driving on the San Diego freeway when he saw a Grateful Dead bumper sticker on a Cadillac DeVille inspiring a famous lyric from which 1984 hit.
Boys of Summer.
Correct. Hiding your emotions is a key theme of which 1979 classic by The Cure?
Tap.
Poet Shel Silverstein wrote the lyrics to which Johnny Cash song about a young man looking to get revenge on his father for the burden bestowed on him at birth?
Boy Named Sue.
Correct. Which song by Kenny Loggins accompanies the iconic beach volleyball scene from the movie Top Gun?
Playing with the Boys.
Correct. Back to our 2 second song.
Oh. Boys Are Back in Town.
Bye.
Boy,
Quickly.
Running out of time. No. We got half of that one. We got three right. Boys of Summer, A Boy Named Sue, and Playing with the Boys. The Boys Are Back in Town is by Thin Lizzy, and it was Boys Don't Cry by The Cure. All right, hang on the line. Three's a good score, Russell. All right, Russell's score is locked in. John is back. So, John, today's category is Oh Boy. Those are song titles that include the word boy or boys.
Okay.
Remember how it works? 2 second song, title, and artists for that one.
Okay.
And then the questions come after that. 60 seconds pass. If you don't know, we can come back to it. Paul, you ready?
I'm ready.
John, are you ready?
I think I am.
All right. 60 seconds on the clock. Category is Oh Boy. Your time starts when Paul plays the music. Good luck, John. Let's take on Russell.
Thin Lizzy, Boys Are Back in Town.
Correct. Don Henley says he was driving...
Boys of Summer.
Correct. Hiding Your Emotions is a key theme of which 1979 classic by The Cure?
Boys Don't Cry.
Correct. Poet Shel Silverstein wrote the lyrics to which Johnny Cash
Boy Named
song...
Sue.
Wow. Which song by Kenny Loggins accompanies the iconic beach volleyball scene from the movie Top Gun?
Playing with the Boys.
Whoa!
Damn!
John,
damn!
That was...
Are we done?
You're yes,
done.
That's a 5 for 5 and maybe faster than Woods has ever done it before. That was a Hall of Fame performance.
Wow.
Russell, I'm sorry. You just ran into a buzzsaw today.
That was electric.
Turns out I know my boys.
We may need to start playing like Woods and not give you the category because you just eviscerated those questions.
Wow. I mean, well, thank you. The Johnny Cash was a softball for me, but yeah. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. John,
sorry, Russ.
Thank you for stopping by. Good to see you as always. Have a good weekend.
Well,
and
well done.
Russell, I'm sorry. I did not know that that was going to go so well for John Flint. That was an incredible performance.
That was well done.
Yeah, that was a do-do this. We got Don't Do This coming up next. I love the do-do this. It came from the Phillies-Dodgers game yesterday where the Dodgers got swept. They've lost 4 in a row as well, by the way. We'll get to that coming up next.
Let's take the Mountain West to task. Mountain West Media Days in Las Vegas. What are you guys doing?
All right, it's coming up after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fam.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why? How many times do I have to tell you?
Oh, I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Still in awe of John Flynn's performance there.
Incredible.
And take on John. I mean, what was that, about 22 seconds or so?
Not even.
To get all five questions. That was amazing. Time for Don't Do This, brought to you by the Kraft Taco in Sorrento Valley. Kraft Taco has some of the best quality tacos in all of San Diego. Go to thekrafttaco.com. Take a look at their happy hour specials today. Thekrafttaco.com. I will get us started, and I will admit this is not really from the world of sports, but as I mentioned, I was anchoring the news last night, our 7 p.m. news on Channel 10. We do, at the end of the 7, like at 7:26, fact or fiction every night, where you take a story that's been like circulating on social media, and you either say, yes, it's true, or you debunk it. Like, no, this is fake. Don't believe everything you see on social media. And yesterday's fact or fiction story had to do with a man in China who was intercepted at a border crossing between Hong Kong and mainland China. Authorities say when the unnamed trafficker was intercepted, they found in his pants 104 live snakes.
What?
Yes, he had 104 live snakes in his pants, including milk snakes and Texas rat snakes. It is not legal to bring in live non-native species to China. Now, this was a true story. He was, in fact, intercepted. We don't have some of the details, like why exactly he was bringing them in, although exotic animals are highly prized as pets, so I'd imagine he had a buyer or buyers set up for some of these snakes and was trying to smuggle them in to the country. So what he did was he had burlap sacks that he had put about...
Yes, I know how...
Five of them.
I know how that
no,
works.
No, and he had, like, stuffed them down his pants, and then in each sack was, like, 20 to 25 snakes.
Talking about sacks.
In his pants with the snakes in his trousers.
I mean, I've heard of a trouser snake, but this is ridiculous. What the hell?
That was a factual story.
So that's what you do on the news when you
apparently
get the anchor
desk. That is what we do on the news last night.
Okay.
I mean, where would you smuggle snakes, Paul?
I wouldn't smuggle snakes. That's something I would never have to worry about. I promise you. Jeez.
They're actually used for food in China as well. Soups. They even make alcohol, like liquor, out of snakes, which I don't want to try.
A shot of rattlesnake?
Yeah. No thanks. None of the snakes were venomous, which is probably wise. That's, if you're going to put snakes down your pants, you don't want them to be the venomous kind. For sure.
All right, I'll go next here. Mountain West Media Day happening right now in Las Vegas, the last couple of days. And the Media Day events are being held at the Circa, which is downtown Las Vegas. It is not right there on the strip with all of the main hotels. This one's about, what is it, like 8 or 9 miles away from
the
strip?
Yeah, it's a good taxi cab
it's
ride
like a
between
minute,
downtown
15,
and the strip,
20-minute
for sure.
Uber ride.
Yeah.
And so they're at the Circa, and the thing with the Circa hotel is that it is a 21 and older hotel. And I know this because they are very strict on 21 and up. Like, they
so
have,
you can't bring the kids to Stadium Swim.
You cannot. Like, young children with you, not going to cause any trouble. No, they will not let you in. I remember we got dropped off in the parking garage. That's where the Uber and Lyft drop-off was. And then you walk across this little sky bridge to get into the casino. And they have a security guard there who checks every single ID for every person that walks in. Now, yes, in Vegas, you're supposed to be 21 to gamble and drink, but you get carded very little in Las Vegas. This place will card you, and they do not let anybody in. Well, the problem with that is some of these football teams have kids that are 19, or 20.
Of course.
Maybe even 18 years
old. I mean,
old.
Unless you're a senior, you're probably under 21, right? Or maybe a junior, but mostly.
Most of them are.
Yeah, most of them are under 21 years old.
Now, the teams don't bring every player for media day.
Right, they only bring a couple.
They bring their stars along with their coaches and all that. But they do have media availability. And I saw that somebody reported yesterday, media day is held at the Circa, a hotel strictly for 21 and older. Boise State star running back Ashton Jainty is only 20 years old. So he hosted a solo media day by himself at the Bellagio, a good 20 minutes away down on the
strip.
He was
banished from media day for
not
being
21. He was not able to be there. And again,
wasn't he like the conference player of the year or something?
Yeah, he's a very good player, so you would think the media would want to hear from him. So they're sitting there talking to so-and-so at the Circa, and then they're like, oh, crap, Ashton's going in 15 minutes. We got to book it all the way down to Bellagio now for his one solo media appearance.
All right. I assume there's some sort of sponsorship deal involved here. Circa does a lot of advertising. You hear them on our station as well. We've given away prizes for Circa. They wanted the Mountain West there, you know, get on TV a little bit. I get it. Probably gave him a nice deal. You can't make an exception, like somehow just have him show up at least for the press conference. I mean, even if he can't stay there, you can't even get him in for a press conference.
Like
have a security guard escort him everywhere he goes.
Unless the Mountain West told all of their schools, hey, don't bring any players that are under 21.
Well, I'm guessing they probably did, but they had to make it. We have to have the conference player of the year here.
So get him a wristband or something.
That's
some sort of an
be.
Exception yeah. that he private, can let him in.
A private security escort throughout the building to make sure he doesn't gamble or drink while he's in there. Is that? It's not like, okay, I get it why you don't want seven-year-olds at your casino pool all day, interrupting the
yes.
you know, the gamblers. It's not a family establishment.
But
a 20-year-old college football player is not the kind of, you know, disruptor that you're probably worried
right.
about allowing into your building. That doesn't even make sense, actually.
Once again, Mountain West just embarrassing.
That makes
himself.
No sense. All right, finally, a little doo-doo this.
D.D. Mega doo-doo.
Thought this was a pretty cool moment. So Citizens Bank Park last night, Philadelphia Phillies were trying to complete a sweep of the Los Angeles Dodgers. It was going well. They were already up 4-1 in the eighth inning when Kyle Schwarber did it again. Launched a home run into the first deck, well, like the first row of the second deck in right field at Citizens Bank Park. And we have it on our YouTube stream. Should we just play the audio
play
and kind of you can kind of hear what goes on? All right.
There's the shot.
Rushed into right field, second deck.
All right, now pause it for a second. So if you didn't see the video, you could sort of quickly see that a guy in a light blue Phillies cap tried to make the catch in the first
front row.
Goes right off his hands, falls down below into the section underneath.
You see that at Petco all the time.
Yeah.
A foul ball hits the third deck behind
falls
home
back
plate.
Down.
And if you're sitting in the front or the lower level, you got to turn around because that ball's probably coming back down.
Again, it's tough to catch a ball like that. It's a Kyle Schwarber home run. Exit velocity, 105, 110 miles per hour, screaming at you. There's no shame in not catching that ball. Here's the problem, though.
Oh, there's a kid sitting next to the dad. He's got his hand on his head.
So, yeah, they got the two boys.
And
in between was like, looks like the mom and the dad.
Yeah, kids are bawling their
and
eyes out.
And he's wearing a Kyle Schwarber jersey, this kid. And he is just crying his eyes out because dad had a chance to catch a home run from his favorite player and biffed it right there on television. He is crying and crying. But wait, do this. So there's a happy ending to this story.
This was a great moment. Look at that. We have great ushers. We really do.
So an usher went and retrieved the ball.
Somehow got it from whoever it ended up with below.
And brought it up to the second deck and gave the ball to the kid that was crying because his dad just missed it.
And this kid is now so happy. I mean, he is beaming.
And he's leaving with the usher. He gave him a big hug.
Yeah.
That's
just
awesome.
Like, okay, usher of the year. Philadelphia Phillies, that guy deserves a raise or a promotion or something because not only did you make the night for a family of your fans, But you also made national television, national radio, and everywhere showing what good folks the people at Citizens Bank Park actually are.
And the Phillies went and beat the Dodgers after
that. And they handed the Dodgers a fourth straight loss. And that is Don't and Do This for a Friday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, when we come back, I got my buddy Matt Janella is going to join us. Huge Padres fan. Did a tremendous Tony Gwynn podcast last year. Hopefully you check that out. But he's also part of the new cast, and I say this that he is part of the new cast, of The Real Housewives of Orange County. Now, his wife is the new star of the show, one of the new friends, but he's part of it. I mean, cameras are all up in his life the last few months as well. I'm so curious to understand this phenomenon, how it works, what goes on behind the scenes. So we will chat with Matty G coming up next. Ben and Paul with you on a Friday on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. What's baseball really like? You can join former Padre MLB All-Star Brett Boone and his big league friends on his podcast, The Boone Podcast, 3 days a week. We get the chance to talk to Brett most Wednesdays, which is fantastic. His podcast is great, though. You can check it out in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Speaking of podcasts, our next guest coming up had a phenomenal podcast on Tony Gwynn. We talked about it last year. If you haven't checked it out, we'll remind you about that. We got Matt Janella standing by. He's going to join us right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So as you probably know, I first started following Matt Janella for his golf coverage, Golf Channel, Sports Illustrated, I think a couple of other spots in his past. Yeah, he moved out to San Diego a few years ago. I found out was a huge Padres fan. And then we met at Goat Hill Park where we play golf regularly and talk Padres baseball. But he's got a whole nother development in his life that has materialized, which is kind of the reason I've brought him on board today. Good morning, Matty. It's good to see you as always.
Good morning, guys. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Yeah. Now, how are you feeling first about the Padres right now? I mean, things felt so good a week ago. Last Friday, got that amazing win in the ninth inning with the Manny walk-off home run. And since then, four straight losses. I can't help but call it a roller coaster. I know Mike Schilt doesn't like that, but we're on the roller coaster ride here.
I was talking to John Ashworth, actually, our friend from Goat Hill Park, and we were saying, you know, being a Padre fan is like, or being the Padres is like being a seven handicap golfer. It's like, you know, birdie, par, par, birdie. Oh, I got a good round going, double bogey, bogey, double bogey. Like I can relate because I'm a seven handicap. It's literally like watching a seven handicap play golf at Goat Hill Park.
But then you always finish like with a par or a birdie to bring you back then the next day because you just bring can't quit.
Oh,
you just
birdied can't quit 18. Them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Birdied 18 to shoot seven over.
Yeah. You just can't quit them. So anyway, I found this fascinating when I learned about it a few weeks ago, but, so the last, couple of months, you've been spending filming a new season of The Real Housewives of Orange County, where your wife, Katie, is the newest cast member on the season that debuted last night on Bravo. Now, Paul's wife, Megan, huge fan of the show. She's going to kind of keep
She's the Bravo archivist.
Updated on what's going on. I am just fascinated by this whole thing. How did this come about? What has your life been like now over these last few months, Matt?
So we got to break this down. I mean, you're throwing a lot of stuff.
Your post yesterday, how you described it as the NFL for women, I think was pretty spot on.
So it's week one. It's week one of a 24-week season, Paul. And right now we're 1-0. You know what I mean? Like we got a nice win yesterday. It was a nice easy intro for my wife into this world of craziness. It came about, we had done Say Yes to the Dress several years ago. To be totally honest with you, I don't exactly know how it came about. I wasn't really actually paying attention. I don't watch the show. She said, hey, they've reached out to me. I'm interviewing. I'm doing some stuff. And before I know it, they said, you are the next Real Housewife of Orange County. So that's put forward this whole other stream of events that needed to happen. And we shot for 5 months and now it's airing. And it's, I watched my wife navigate this, you know, like if we went out as eight strange guys, I feel like we would, maybe there would be some, you know, oh, you're a Dodger fan, I'm a Padre fan, but we would find common ground. Eventually we could all end up playing golf together. You know, like there might be even one, you know, one exchange of guys being like, oh, you know, I don't like you. You don't like, but we would
can't be conflict all the time though.
Yeah. Like, but this just, this gets so nasty and they yell at each other. They look to try to figure out ways that they can, you know, get into each other's business and cause problems. And it's pretty, it is the NFL of women.
This is a great teaser for the season, obviously. And I don't know how many people in our audience watch, but I'm fascinated though. So it's reality TV. I use that in quotes, but I've always wondered, so how real is it? What are the mechanics of this show? Like, how much are you seeing these cameras in your day-to-day lives?
They probably have hundreds and hundreds of hours of footage that they got to cut down to for each show.
It's 100 hours of filming for 1 hour of TV.
Holy.
And they do 24 hours of TV. So there are crews, being with my background in storytelling and production, I was more fascinated by the whole production element than anything else, to be honest with you. And there would be crews of 30 people rocking up at our house. I mean, they're vans, trucks, multiple sound people. Now, people say, oh, did they tell you what to say? They don't tell you what they introduce ideas or topics to talk about, or, you know, it's like they put something in the middle of the table and say, all right, discuss, but they don't tell you what to say. I mean, it's real. This conflict and the yelling and arguments and stuff. Now we're year one. We are rookies. And again, I'm proud of my wife, the way she navigated and stayed true to who she is and stuck up for herself when she needed. I mean, she's putting on a jersey and she's going in there and she's doing battle.
Talking to Matt Janella, he's a real house husband of Orange County on the new season on Bravo. How do you manage like the lack of privacy? You know, how intrusive is that in your day-to-day life?
I think it definitely helped that I have a background in TV and that we, you know, I was on a morning show, the golf, you know, morning drive on Golf Channel. And that would be a very small introduction into the idea that I've been mic'd up for a long time. And Katie, my wife, has seen that whole process and has been a part of the process from time to time. It's very intrusive. I mean, especially for her. And then at times for us, because they would come into the house, you know, 2-3 days a week. And, Katie uses me as her sounding board throughout this season because she's new and doesn't know a lot of the other women. I'm sure your listeners are fascinated by this whole. I mean, there are 17 million viewers of this show, which, to put that in perspective, doubles the final round of the Masters. And so I'm mesmerized by just how many people actually watch this show.
And then I think some people must be curious because you have kids as well, and how they dealt with them and how hesitant you guys were to kind of throw them into the world and how much you could kind of protect them from it.
Yeah, we have four kids. Only two are going to be involved in the show, the oldest and the youngest. Our daughter, Kylie, is, you know, she was of age and was interested in and chose to do it. And then our little guy pops in and out, but he's been familiar with the camera. He's a little ham, and he really enjoyed and got to know the production. I mean, he loves it, and we're not going to really show him the actual show. But we did allow him to be a part of the filming process, which he loved them and they loved him. And I think he has a few, you know, drop the audience lines with some of his observations and thoughts on what his mom is navigating. So
Matty Janella is with us. He's on The Real Housewives of Orange County. Well, his wife, Katie, is the new season debuted last night on Bravo.
I saw Katie's making history too. She is the first Asian woman on in the show's history. Like, it's been going for like 20 years and it's been nothing
first, like,
but
Korean
old white women for like 20 years. So she's breaking through some ceilings there.
Yeah, and she didn't really anticipate. I mean, she wanted that opportunity, and the amount of feedback she's getting, support she's getting from the Asian community is a little overwhelming to her at this point. She didn't realize that that was going to be such a big, she was told that going in, you're going to be the first Asian on Real Housewives of Orange County, 18th season. You're going to be the first Korean on the Bravo Real Housewives franchise. She's an adoptee from Korea. She's really kind of owning this whole role with a large badge of courage. And that also, you know, that impacts how she's portrayed. I mean, she realizes there's a lot more going on than just her trying to, you know, go toe to toe with some of these social conflicts.
Now, last thing, Matt, you've been in the public spotlight, obviously, but nothing like this, the kind of opinions you're going to be getting on social media. Are you ready for what is now coming over the next 23 weeks?
No, there's no way. I mean, Twitter, there's a good chance I'm off Twitter here very soon. I mean, that's a nasty, nasty world. Instagram is a lot. It's like, you know, social media light, and we find that a little more embracive. And then she's up on TikTok, but I had someone on Twitter last night, the first sort of what he's like, oh, this Real Housewives is an example of what's wrong with American society. A bunch of, you know, childish people running around that are, quote, rich and have things all out of perspective or something, you know, something to the effect of running down the whole franchise and the concept. I was like, yeah, that sounds like a race or Live versus PGA Tour. Or, you know, I was like, where do you all social media in general? I said, I don't know. You do you, George, but, you know, we're just going to keep kind of going on. And we've started a business called Tee Shots, flavored shots for on the golf course.
Oh, you got to take advantage of all this publicity now. I mean, you know, well, anything you can.
A big part of that was that we're building out businesses, and this platform and this opportunity to reach this kind of audience is not, you know. That was a big reason why we said yes, honestly.
I can't let you go without at least a little bit of golf talk, but I think people would be surprised at, you know, with Matt, and, you know, he's covered golf for so many years, Golf Channel, Morning Drive, how disillusioned, like, I can say this, that you've become with the pro golf circuit right now. PGA Tour, Live, everything, and I'm starting to feel it as well. I mean, I'm excited about the Open next week, but what they have created now is like the worst possible version of what pro golf, I think, really can be at the moment.
I agree with that, Ben. The majors, I said it when it happened, the majors are more major and everything else is just a lot less. You know, the week to week is just so less compelling because we're watching a watered down or a diluted version of whatever we were, you know, sold on as professional golf. And the majors are where we get a chance to actually see, you know, the whole sum total of the best compete against each other. And I think we saw that at Pinehurst and we saw that at Augusta, and we're going to see that, you know, again next week. But other than the majors, I just don't feel like they deserve or are working towards a product that actually, you know, caters to the fan, which, oh, by the way, it's an entertainment industry. I think they've just gotten so insular and so much in this sort of bubble that they've lost touch with what actually matters from a professional golf standpoint. And I think that's why you have the emergence of all these YouTube golfers and this other sort of version of a golf product that just seems to be way more watchable and interesting.
And you've really kind of then focused now on the fun part of golf. You got your bonfire tournaments that you got going now as well. If you want to tell people about those, they're very cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I started a production company 4 years ago, it was a lifestyle, events and experiences, and then COVID hit, and that wasn't great timing. And then we started the Fire Pit Collective, and we were a boutique media company trying to serve, you know, several verticals of golf content. And I couldn't make it work from a financial standpoint. So we're back to Fire Pit Productions, and we're putting on bonfire events, which are going to be, you know, places at Paso Tiempo, Gamble Sands, places where you can go and get exclusive access and have some fun experiences. And we're creating content around that and telling stories about course restoration, renovations, and continuing to do the Fire Pit podcast.
Very cool. And if anyone didn't catch your Tony Gwynn podcast series, where can they still find that?
That's still at firepitcollective.com. And I love your round tables. I love Tony Gwynn Jr.'s perspectives. I love
what's baseball really like? You can join former Padre MLB All-Star Brett Boone and his big league friends on his podcast, The Boone Podcast, 3 days a week. We get the chance to talk to Brett most Wednesdays, which is fantastic. His podcast is great, though. You can check it out in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Speaking of podcasts, our next guest coming up had a phenomenal podcast on Tony Gwynn. We talked about it last year. If you haven't checked it out, we'll remind you about that. We got Matt Janella standing by. He's going to join us right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So as you probably know, I first started following Matt Janella for his golf coverage, Golf Channel, Sports Illustrated, I think a couple of other spots in his past. Yeah, he moved out to San Diego a few years ago. I found out was a huge Padres fan. And then we met at Goat Hill Park where we play golf regularly and talk Padres baseball. But he's got a whole nother development in his life that has materialized, which is kind of the reason I've brought him on board today. Good morning, Matty. It's good to see you as always.
Good morning, guys. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Yeah. Now, I how are you feeling first about the Padres right now? I mean, things felt so good a week ago. Last Friday, got that amazing win in the ninth inning with the Manny walk-off home run. And since then, four straight losses. I can't help but call it a roller coaster. I know Mike Schilt doesn't like that, but we're on the roller coaster ride here.
I was talking to John Ashworth, actually, our friend from Goat Hill Park, and we were saying, you know, being a Padre fan is like, or being the Padres is like being a seven handicap golfer. It's like, you know, birdie, par, par, birdie. Oh, I got a good round coming, double bogey, bogey, double bogey. Like I can relate because I'm a seven handicap. It's literally like watching a seven handicap play golf at Goat Hill Park.
But then you always finish like with a par or a birdie to bring you back then the next day because you just can't quit.
Well,
you just can't
18.
Quit them.
Yeah. Birdied 18 to shoot seven over.
Yeah. You just can't quit them. So anyway, I found this fascinating when I learned about it a few weeks ago, but, so the last, couple of months, you've been spending filming a new season of The Real Housewives of Orange County, where your wife, Katie, is the newest cast member on the season that debuted last night on Bravo. Now, Paul's wife, Megan, huge fan of the show. She's going to kind of keep
us the Bravo archivist
updated on what's going on. I am just fascinated by this whole thing. How did this come about? What has your life been like now over these last few months, Matt?
So we got to break this down. I mean, you're throwing a lot of
stuff.
Post yesterday, how you described it as the NFL for women, I think was pretty spot on.
So it's week one. It's week one of a 24-week season, Paul. And right now we're 1-0. You know what I mean? Like we got a nice win yesterday. It was a nice easy intro from my wife into this world of craziness. It came about, we had done Say Yes to the Dress several years ago. To be totally honest with you, I don't exactly know how it came about. I wasn't really actually paying attention. I don't watch the show. She said, hey, they've reached out to me. I'm interviewing. I'm doing some stuff. And before I know it, they said, you are the next Real Housewife of Orange County. So that's put forward this whole other stream of events that needed to happen. And we shot for 5 months and now it's airing. And it's, I watched my wife navigate this, you know, like if we went out as eight strange guys, I feel like we would, maybe there would be some, you know, oh, you're a Dodger fan, I'm a Padre fan, but we would find common ground. Eventually we could all end up playing golf together. You know, like there might be even one exchange of guys being like, oh, hey, you know, I don't like you, you know, like, but we would
can't be conflict all the time though.
but this gets so nasty and they yell at each other. They look to try to figure out ways that they can, you know, get into each other's business and cause problems. And it's pretty. It is the NFL of women.
This is a great teaser for the season, obviously. And I don't know how many people in our audience watch, but I'm fascinated, though. So it's reality TV. I use that in quotes, but I've always wondered. So how real is it? What are the mechanics of this show? Like, how much are you seeing these cameras in your day-to-day lives?
They probably have hundreds and hundreds of hours of footage that they got to cut down to for each show.
It's 100 hours of filming for 1 hour of TV.
Holy.
And they do 24 hours of TV. So there are crews. Being with my background in storytelling and production, I was more fascinated by the whole production element than anything else, to be honest with you. And there would be crews of 30 people rocking up at our house. I mean, they're vans, trucks, multiple sound people. Now, people say, oh, did they tell you what to say? They don't tell you what they introduce ideas or topics to talk about. Or, you know, it's like they put something in the middle of the table and say, all right, discuss. But they don't tell you what to say. I mean, it's real. This conflict and the yelling and arguments and stuff. Now, we're year one. We are rookies. And again, I'm proud of my wife, the way she navigated and stayed true to who she is and stuck up for herself when she needed. I mean, she's putting on a jersey and she's going in there and she's doing battle.
Talking to Matt Ginella, he's a real house husband of Orange County on the new season on Bravo. How do you man like the lack of privacy? You know, how intrusive is that in your day-to-day life?
I think it definitely helped that I have a background in TV and that we, you know, I was on a morning show, the Golf, you know, Morning Drive on Golf Channel, and that would be a very small introduction into the idea that I've been mic'd up for a long time. And Katie, my wife, has seen that whole process and has been a part of the process from time to time. It's very intrusive. I mean, especially for her, and then at times for us, because they would come into the house, you know, 2-3 days a week, and Katie uses me as her sounding board throughout this season because she's new and doesn't know a lot of the other women. I'm sure your listeners are fascinated by this whole. I mean, there are 17 million viewers of this show, which, to put that in perspective, doubles the final round of the Masters. And so I'm mesmerized by just how many people actually watch this show.
And then I think some people must be curious because you have kids as well, and how they dealt with them and how hesitant you guys were to kind of throw them into the world and how much you could kind of protect them from it.
Yeah, we have 4 kids. Only 2 are going to be involved in the show, the oldest and the youngest. Our daughter, Kylie, is, you know, she was of age and was interested in and chose to do it. And then our little guy pops in and out, but he's been familiar with the camera. He's a little ham, and he really enjoyed and got to know the production. I mean, he loves it, and we're not going to really show him the actual show. But we did allow him to be a part of the filming process, which he loved them and they loved him. And I think he has a few, you know, drop the audience lines with some of his observations and thoughts on what his mom is navigating. So
Matty Ginella is with us. He's on the Real Housewives of Orange County. Well, his wife, Katie, is the new season debuted last night.
I saw Katie's making history too. She is the first Asian woman on in the show's history. Like, it's been going for like 20 years and it's been nothing
first, like,
but
Korean
old white women for like 20 years. So she's breaking through some ceilings there.
Yeah. And that's, and she didn't really anticipate. I mean, she wanted that opportunity and the amount of feedback she's getting, support she's getting from the Asian community is a little overwhelming to her at this point. She didn't realize that was going to be such a big, she was told that going in, you're going to be the first Asian on Real Housewives of Orange County, 18th season. You're going to be the first Korean on the Bravo Real Housewives franchise. She's an adoptee from Korea. She's really kind of owning this whole role with a large badge of courage. And that also, you know, that impacts how she's portrayed. I mean, she realizes there's a lot more going on than just her trying to, you know, go toe to toe with some of these social conflicts.
Now, last thing, Matt, you've been in the public spotlight, obviously, but nothing like this. The kind of opinions you're going to be getting on social media, are you ready for what is now coming over the next 23 weeks?
No, there's no way. I mean, Twitter, there's a good chance I'm off Twitter here very soon. I mean, that's a nasty, nasty world. Instagram is a lot. It's like, you know, social media light, and we find that a little more abrasive. And then she's up on TikTok. But I had someone on Twitter last night, the first sort of what he's like, oh, this Real Housewives is an example of what's wrong with American society. A bunch of, you know, childish people running around that are, quote, rich and have things all out of perspective or something, you know, something to the effect of running down the whole franchise and the concept. I was like, yeah, that sounds like a race or Live versus PGA Tour. Or, you know, I was like, where do you all social media in general? I said, I don't know. You do you, George, but, you know, we're just going to keep kind of going on. And we've started a business called Tee Shots, flavored shots for on the golf course.
Oh, you got to take advantage of all this publicity now. I mean, you know, well, anything you can.
Know, that, a big part of that was that we're building out businesses, and this platform and this opportunity to reach this kind of audience is not, you know. That was a big reason why we said yes, honestly.
I can't let you go without at least a little bit of golf talk, but I think people would be surprised at, you know, with Matt, and, you know, he's covered golf for so many years, Golf Channel, Morning Drive, how disillusioned, like, I can say this, that you've become with the pro golf circuit right now. PGA Tour, Live, everything, and I'm starting to feel it as well. I mean, I'm excited about the Open next week, but what they have created now is like the worst possible version of what pro golf, I think, really can be at the moment.
I agree with that, Ben. The majors, I said it when it happened, the majors are more major and everything else is just a lot less. You know, the week to week is just so less compelling because we're watching a watered down or a diluted version of whatever we were, you know, sold on as professional golf. And the majors are where we get a chance to actually see, you know, the whole sum total of the best compete against each other. And I think we saw that at Pinehurst and we saw that at Augusta, and we're going to see that, you know, again next week. But other than the majors, I just don't feel like they deserve or are working towards a product that actually, you know, caters to the fan, which, oh, by the way, it's an entertainment industry. I think they've just gotten so insular and so much in this sort of bubble that they've lost touch with what actually matters from a professional golf standpoint. And I think that's why you have the emergence of all these YouTube golfers and this other sort of version of a golf product that just seems to be way more watchable and interesting.
And you've really kind of then focused now on the fun part of golf. You got your bonfire tournaments that you got going now as well. If you want to tell people about those, they're very cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I started a production company 4 years ago, it was a lifestyle, events and experiences, and then COVID hit, and that wasn't great timing. And then we started the Fire Pit Collective, and we were a boutique media company trying to serve, you know, several verticals of golf content. And I couldn't make it work from a financial standpoint. So we're back to Fire Pit Productions, and we're putting on bonfire events, which are going to be, you know, places at Paso Tiempo, Gamble Sands, places where you can go and get exclusive access and have some fun experiences. And we're creating content around that and telling stories about course restoration, renovations, and continuing to do the Fire Pit podcast.
Very cool. And if anyone didn't catch your Tony Gwynn podcast series, where can they still find that?
That's still at firepitcollective.com. And, I love your round tables. I love Tony Gwynn Jr.'s perspectives. I love how you guys break it all down and all the different voices. I think you do an incredible job. I listened to yesterday, and you know, you guys you hit all the key topics and the points that need to be made. And I appreciate all that you guys do, and the way we're all in this together, right? I find it to be very cathartic to be a part of this community and to be listening in on so many avid fans, and the way the crowd just continues to support this volatile team that keeps getting trotted out. I really hope they sort it out. I believe in Mike Schilt. I believe in AJ Preller. I believe in the stars that we have. And they, we, as Tony Gwynn Jr. said, we haven't really had the full product out on the field at any point for any long period of time this year. And I think once we get there, if and when we get there, we'll get served the product that I think we all know that they can deliver.
Love the optimism, although you're the reason why Adam will never let us stop doing the roundtable now. So thanks a lot, Matt. Have a good weekend, and appreciate the stories. Good luck on the rest of the Real Housewives season.
Looking forward to some more middle relief, guys. I can't wait. Thank you.
Trade deadline's coming up.
I might need some middle relief.
Matt Ginella spending a few minutes with us. Appreciate that. Catching up with Matty G. And yeah, Bravo. What, new episodes on Thursday nights? Is that how it works?
Sure.
Megan Randall will let you know all the details if you really do want to follow the season coming up. All right, we'll come back. We'll reset the show. Do want to get into that Padres topic. Is it worth even making a big splash at the trading deadline for this team right now? And we've got the Roundel Report and Mike Schilt all coming up ahead here on 97.3 The Fan.